You're watching the College Football Playback, all in the Sports Objective. If you're tuned in via our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, let us hear from you with your thoughts and comments as we take a look back at the week that was around college football. Now, here are the guys.
We should have gotten Morgan Ehlers to do that intro for us, guys.
Hey, I'm sorry to disappoint.
That would have been pretty cool. Welcome into the Sports Objective Playback College Football Show.
Welcome in, guys, and a beautiful Sunday late morning here. My name is Dave Richmond on the road to get an oil change, and then we have a big event this afternoon at Southern National Motorsports Park, where I'll be live with you guys at home. Hey, Kyle from LaGrange, what's up, man?
What's going on, Dave? Just getting ready to talk about the day that was in college football and look forward to next week.
Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, man?
Good morning, guys.
Yeah, it was a very exciting day, and I tell you one thing, the first thing that comes to mind is, guys, that very nervous about the next 2 weeks because, wow, Central Florida, we'll talk the American football first, Central Florida all over Georgia Tech, 49-21, guys. That was I know Central Florida, UCF is good, but.
Yeah, they sure are, Dave. UCF all over Georgia Tech yesterday, like you said, was one going away. I expected a more competitive ball game, and you got that the third quarter. Georgia Tech hung with UCF in the third, but in the first half, it was all UCF. In the fourth quarter, it was all UCF. And the Knights handled business. It looked like not the UCF was bad by any means last year. They were good. But it looked like the UCF of old, meaning the couple years previous to that where they went to New Year's Six bowl games. So UCF looks to be perhaps the best team in the American and all of the group of five based on one week of football. I do think Georgia Tech's offense isn't very good. Georgia Tech's had a great defense. That's what's scary. UCF dropped 49 on them, and Georgia Tech has a great defense. I don't think Georgia Tech's offense is that good. So it'll be interesting to see what the Pirates can do next week scoring on them. But let me tell you something. It's going to take a hell of a defensive effort if you're going to even slow them down. What do you think, Bubba?
Totally agree. That's what I know. We were texting back and forth yesterday watching that ball game. Yeah. And I said we could score 50 and lose next week.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, it may be 65-50, and to be honest with you, I'd be pretty happy.
Go ahead. I'm muted, Dave, for a moment.
Yeah, I hate to get some background noise there, but you know, like you said, we could score 50 and lose, and you know, I think it's gonna be a high scoring ball game. Don't want to look ahead too much at our game next week just yet. We're looking back at UCF, but. I only watched so much of that game because it wasn't very competitive. I tend to watch whatever game's competitive. It doesn't matter who it is. And since UCF had that game in hand, I only watched so much of it. But up-tempo, man, they came out yesterday, Bubba, like it was, you know, the third game of the year. Even though, you know, week-wise, it should have been the third game of the year. It was their first game. Their offense came out and did not miss a lick.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech jumped on them early. They ran the kickoff back to about the 20-yard line or something, and then two or three plays later scored. So less than a minute in, the Yellow Jackets were up 7-0. But then, like you mentioned already, the remainder of that first half was all UCF. It was 28 unanswered. Then Georgia Tech got within 28-21 in the third quarter, and I was actually watching another game at that point, and you told me that they had closed it to 7. So I flipped it back over there, and from that point on, it was very much like the first half in terms of UCF scored 21 unanswered, and then they ran out the clock in the red zone late in the game, did the right thing there, not trying to run it up, and finished 49-21. Dylan Gabriel, 27 out of 41 for 417 yards, 4 touchdowns. He did throw one pick. And then Otis Anderson and Greg McCray were very solid on the ground as well. But you take a look at UCF, they had 3 receivers, or two that had 100-yard games. Marlon Williams had over 150. Jalen Robinson topped 100. And then Trey Nixon, who unfortunately went out with an injury, he had something like 95.
Yeah, that's impressive, and that shows good ball distribution. Like I said, I didn't watch a lot of it. When they cut it to 7, I flipped it back over there, and the next thing I know, it's over again, so I turned it. Good win for the Knights. I'm just glad to see our Pirates hopefully on the field. And like I said, Bubba, if the good Lord willing and the corona don't rise next Saturday, win or lose, I'm just glad to see us play. So it's going to be a tall task with the Knights coming in.
Yeah, and taking a look at what each of these teams has coming next, you have Georgia Tech going to Syracuse next Saturday, and Syracuse is 0-2. They lost to Pitt yesterday, which we'll maybe discuss a little bit more later on. But in week one, they fell at North Carolina. So the Orange is in desperate need of a victory and returning home to take on Georgia Tech. And then, obviously, UCF is going to be in Greenville, 12 noon kickoff on ESPN Plus.
ESPN Plus as of right now, but, you know, there's games canceled every week. Some other American news I'll go and get to in a second. Games canceled every week. Hopefully our game won't be one of those. Hopefully no large group of COVID tests on either side testing positive, and we play Saturday. But wouldn't be surprised to see that game moved off of ESPN Plus because of another game being canceled. But as we sit here today, 12 noon ESPN Plus. The Memphis Tigers, Bubba, becomes the first team to have two games postponed in a row. In fact, it was straight up canceled. They canceled their game at UTSA for next Friday night. So that means Memphis didn't play Houston this weekend, and they're not playing the UTSA Roadrunners next weekend. So it's two games in a row. Memphis is canceled, and they will not play again until October 3rd. So they are going to go from opening the season on September 5th with a win over Arkansas State and will not play again until October 3rd. They did schedule Stephen F. Austin for an open date in November to replace that UTSA game. They've already replaced it. And UTSA is already, you know, scheduled a replacement game. They're going to play Middle Tennessee next Friday night. I don't know if that's a conference game that was moved or if they're playing UTS or if they're playing Middle in a non-conference game. Obviously, it's a conference team, but you can schedule them as a non-conference opponent. So I don't know. I need to look that up. But anyway.
Next, let's talk about what took place down in New Orleans. And Tulane jumped all over Navy in the first half. It was 24-0. It looked like Navy may be in store for what took place in their opener, losing 55-3 to BYU. But it was not to be. The Middies fought like we thought they would, like we forecasted a four-quarter game in yesterday's version of the inside slant. And that is certainly what happened. Navy scored 27 unanswered, rallying from that 24-0 deficit mid-third quarter to pull off a tremendous win down in Yulman Stadium.
Yeah, biggest comeback in Navy history, actually. I expected Navy to be much more competitive with Tulane. I did not expect them to come back when it was 24-0. When I watched some of the first half of that game, it looked like the same Navy that had been playing BYU. I said Navy may be the worst team in college football. And my God, in the second half, it's like they flipped the switch at halftime. The most impressive, there was two things that were very impressive about Navy's comeback. One, they did a lot of that throwing the football, which is not Navy's forte. And partially, I think Tulane wasn't ready for that, didn't prepare for a passing game. So they caught Navy a little off guard with that, or caught Tulane a little off guard with that by throwing the ball in the second half. Did it successfully. You got to execute it, and they're not used to doing it. But the part that's more impressive to me is their defense has been hot garbage, complete hot garbage through six quarters. And then in the second half, it's like they remembered how to tackle again. And it's hard. That's one of the hardest things to do is fix defense. You can fix offense as the season goes. But typically, if you ain't got a defense, unless you're young and just get better as the season goes, typically, if you ain't got a defense, you ain't got a defense. And particularly when it's a lot of fundamentals you're not doing right, like wrapping up. And in the second half, suddenly, Navy started tackling and wrapping up. That was impressive to see and very surprising.
And, Bubba, I was going to – Kyle, that was exactly what I was going to talk about for that game is the fact I was surprised in both halves – how much Navy was passing. Do you know how many pass attempts they had yesterday, Bubba? That was one of the surprising things about that game.
No, Dave, I'll have to look up the number of attempts, but Morris, the quarterback, he threw for 100-plus in the second half. I want to say it was like 140 yards passing for the game, I am unsure of the number of attempts. I'll check on that.
You know, guys, I was looking at that game yesterday, and I was just so shocked to see how bad Navy was playing. I really thought that they would, talking about the first half, they were just, oh, my God. I was like, here we go again, 55-3. And what was that stat they had up? I think it was in the first – what was that? The first six quarters, they were outscored Bubba 79-3 or something like that. That's and I was right. like, oh, my – I said, oh, my God, this is just this is just terrible, knowing that we know they're being a conference mate and they should play better. And then all of a sudden, like you guys said, in the second half, it was, I think that was a surprising thing. It was surprising to see them so bad in the first half. It was surprising to see them to come back and win. And then the third thing, as I've already mentioned, it was surprising to see how much they threw the ball. I don't think I've ever, guys, have you ever seen them throw the ball that much in a game?
Yeah, they, like 2011 in the fourth quarter against East Carolina.
Yeah, they actually. Okay.
Can't remember. It's been a while.
Yeah, they didn't have that many attempts. They did have more than normal for them, but not all that much. It was they had 11 attempts.
Oh, wow. That's all?
It was, wow.
Morris was 6 out of 11 for 139 yards, one touchdown, no interception. So, and also in addition to Morris's arm, Carruthers, I believe that's their big fullback. He had 127 yards, so a little over 5 yards per attempt for him.
Yeah, well, and one of the things we need to talk about with that game is Tulane. Tulane played like hot garbage in the first half against South Alabama, then played well in the fourth quarter and pulled out a big. And this week they played great in the first half and played like hot garbage in the second half. So can Tulane play a four-quarter ball game?
Yeah, this is the inconsistencies. They have, you see the bright spots, and we mentioned yesterday on Inside the Slant how Willie Fritz got that contract extension. I guess it was Wednesday or Thursday. It was middle of the week. To 2027, and man, I thought they were going to, when they started out like that against Navy, I said, good God, they might have a chance to win the championship this year, but if they don't play more consistent, they definitely won't. And then after seeing the UCF game, I think we know if it was the end of the season right now, UCF would definitely be in the driver's seat. They still, I think, will, but a lot of things could still happen.
No doubt. Dave, just out of curiosity, what's the name of our pregame show?
The Inside Slant.
There you go.
I'm trying to get – all right, hang on. I got used to that. Well, I thought we were going in with a different name, and I was still
trying to – you called it Inside the Slant. That cracked me up. But anyway, Tulane – great defensive line. They got some stud defensive linemen, but it is very strange that they played a half of football each week. I mean, it's like I said, if you take the second half against South Alabama and the first half against Navy, you got a hell of a football team. I don't know what that's about. I've seen teams many times that either play well in the first half or in the second half or vice versa. Not very often have I seen a team that plays 1 week good in the first half, 1 week bad in the second half, and then turns it around. Kind of strange. I'm really starting to wonder how good Tulane is. I'm not sure Tulane's nowhere near as good as people thought they were going to be this year. A lot of people thought they would be a competitor, you know, to challenge for the conference title, like a surprise team. And I'm not sure Tulane's very good after seeing them play 2 weeks in a row, Bubba.
Yeah, Kyle, and taking a look at what these teams have upcoming, Navy is off next week before taking on Air Force on October 3rd. And then Tulane is at Southern Miss. We'll get to Southern Miss in a little bit. I'm talking about what happened with them last night, losing an absolute heartbreaker to Skip Holtz and La Tech. But that game at USM next Saturday is on the stadium.
That's an interesting game. Southern Miss is another football team that looks very schizophrenic. I'm going to call that the Schizophrenia Bowl. So, guys, I guess, you know, looking ahead to other conference games, one team that was very impressive yesterday in the American was SMU. Their offense came alive under first-year offensive coordinator Garrett Riley. Obviously, Sonny Dykes is an air raid guy. Garrett comes from that background, being the younger brother of Lincoln Riley. And they struggled a little bit week one against Texas State. No struggle yesterday against North Texas in the battle for the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. SMU just lit it up on North Texas. So they put, 65 on them, Bubba? And I think it could have been worse.
Yeah, 65-35. And this is one I had not looked at the over-under, and I'm not a betting man, but if I was, that's one that I would have been jumping all over. The over-under in this game was 72. And obviously SMU scored 65 by themselves, and I was texting you, I think it was about 8 minutes left in that ball game, and there was already a combined 97 points, blowing that 72 out of the water. So that was pretty easy money. I would like to know maybe how many people put money on that one. But Shane Buechele, 24 out of 33, 344 yards, and that's obviously a tremendous day, and I don't know what the backup may have done, but I also know that they ran for a tremendous amount of yards in this game because they had Bentley, their tremendous back, had 227 yards on just 19 carries and also three touchdowns. So the Mustangs had it going on both the ground and through the air yesterday down at UNT.
Yeah, and you know, who probably noticed that score after their performance yesterday, and we'll get to this game later. But after Appalachian State puts up a grand total of 7 points, and they see Garrett Riley, who was initially their offensive coordinator, and his offense putting up 65 points, that's got to be a little nerve-wracking if you're a Mountaineer.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I had App State friends texting me during that ball game saying, is this what we can expect moving forward as far as
only Tony Peterson, king of the crappy offense.
But, we know about that. We know about that in East Carolina, don't we, guys?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my. And yeah, you know what? You know what? I'm glad he's not here.
Moving on in the American. You had Tulsa traveling to Stillwater to take on number 11 Oklahoma State. That was a tremendous ball game, tremendous from the standpoint that it was competitive. But if you would have told me that game would be competitive, that wouldn't surprise me. But if you would have told me that it would have been a defensive struggle with both teams having less than 300 yards of offense, Tulsa had 278 and Oklahoma State had 277. I would have never believed that. I would have thought if it was competitive that it had been a shootout.
You know, I've noticed, and I don't know if it was a mandate in the way the Big 12 was having these schools practice, but these Big 12 schools early on, every one I've watched, unless I'm, not thinking of someone, but all the Big 12 teams that I can think of that I've watched, their offenses have looked atrocious. I guess, the only thing I can think of is the Big 12 may have mandated certain ways to practice during COVID. Because, Bubba, am I wrong? Has there been a Big 12 team that has looked good offensively yet? And that is typically an offensive conference where they're scoring left and right.
Yeah, just thinking back off the top of my head, and not unless it was a case where you had an Oklahoma against a Missouri State or Texas against UTEP.
Right.
They had the opponent totally outmanned, but just off the top of my head, that conference has had its struggles in competitive ball games on the offensive side.
Yeah, and like you said, except for Texas against UTEP and Oklahoma against Missouri State, nobody has looked good offensively.
Brock Purdy and Iowa State, sorry, Kyle, I didn't mean to step on you there, but Brock Purdy and Iowa State, we know what happened with them in Louisiana. Brock Purdy completed less than 50% for like 140 yards.
Yeah, and you're talking about somebody that's a dark horse Heisman Trophy candidate and a school that a lot of people thought might be a surprise team to win the Big 12. Kansas State struggled offensively against Arkansas State. Kansas obviously looked like hot garbage against Coastal. Kansas probably is hot garbage, but it's just weird to me. It leads me to believe that there was something to do with the way they've been practicing in the Big 12. And I would have liked to have seen what would have happened yesterday had Houston and Baylor went ahead and played. Unfortunately, Baylor had to cancel that game because of COVID. But I would have been interested to see.
Or did they?
Well, no, they did. They did.
I'm joking.
They went out of their way to schedule a game. Would have been interested to see how that one played out.
Yeah. A little bit more about this Tulsa-Oklahoma State game. Tulsa led 7-3 after three quarters, despite the fact that they did not convert a third down. And it remained that way throughout the ball game. 0-for-11 on third down, and they had 15 penalties for 120 yards. Certainly seemed like they were disjointed in terms of their communication and just they have an experienced quarterback, but they were getting delay of game penalties there late, and they were down in the ball game, and they were getting delay of game penalties. It seems like multiple delay of game penalties, which was tough to figure, and the commentators were making note of that. But
that's the whole thing. Bubba, Tulsa did not play well. No, not at all. Won the game, and they played like crap.
Yeah, offensively at least. And then for Oklahoma State, they inserted a true freshman quarterback, Illingworth, late in the third quarter, and he provided the spark for him. He only threw about five passes. I think he finished 4 out of 5 for close to 80 yards. But he provided a spark for Oklahoma State, connected on a couple of 30-plus yard passes, and they were able to do what they needed to do to get some coaches don't like to say an ugly victory, but it was an ugly victory in Stillwater yesterday. Next week they have West Virginia coming in, so that will be one to keep an eye on, 3:30 on ABC. And then Tulsa, they better figure things out in a hurry because they go to Arkansas State, who was off this week due to COVID issues, and they will be in Jonesboro taking on the Red Wolves at 3:30 on ESPN2.
Yeah, I will say this about Oklahoma State. They historically have had some WTF games. If you think back to a few years ago against Western Michigan, I can remember them losing to Troy a few years back. They've had their moments where you're just like, what the hell happened in that game? So at least they didn't lose this one. For Oklahoma State's benefit, obviously I would have loved to see Tulsa win it for the conference.
Moving on within the American, and you had USF, extremely tall task, traveling to South Bend to take on number 7 Notre Dame, and that one finished 52-0 in a game that was all fighting Irish from the get go. It was 35-0 at halftime, and to be honest, when I looked at the box score, I guess it was one of those cases where they jumped on them so quickly that the total yardage wasn't what you would necessarily think. Don't get me wrong, they still had, probably 450 or 500 yards or something, but not as much. I was expecting to see about 600 or so, but they had 281 yards rushing, and then USF just really struggling offensively, as they did in week one against the Citadel when they did win 27-6. But USF, 231 total yards. And they, this is surprising too, considering the game was so lopsided, USF didn't even commit a turnover.
Yeah. I don't think USF is very good. Hopefully that's the case, Bubba, because our Pirates have struggled in recent years. So we need somebody that's worse than us in the conference. I don't know what more to say about that, man. Notre Dame, I didn't watch any of that game, to be honest. I flipped it over there to USA. The game was on USA, which is really odd, and watched just a few minutes of it, but it was all fighting Irish. Being it was on USA, Bubba, and that is the home of WWE and has been for years. I got to get this in. I guess Notre Dame laid the smack down on their candy ass, but it was bad. That was lopsided. Now you're going to have to hear all the pundits talk about how Notre Dame, could they be the contender that can knock off Clemson? We'll get to that later as we get to the ACC, but not a good performance for the Bulls yesterday.
And next up for those clubs, Notre Dame will be traveling our way and taking on Wake Forest as the Demon Deacons, a tremendously difficult start will continue. They'll have to play, obviously, their best game yet after losing a heartbreaker last night, 45-42, a game that we'll talk more about in a few minutes down at Carter-Finley Stadium to NC State. So they have that one. That's a nooner on ABC. And then you have USF. This is an intriguing game because FAU had its game yesterday at Georgia Southern postponed or canceled, whichever, due to COVID. And that was actually because of FAU. You would have thought it was probably Georgia Southern with them having 33 guys out in week one, but it was actually because of FAU and the Willie Taggart era, we hope, will get underway next Saturday night, 6 p.m. on the CBS Sports Network against USF.
Yeah, like I said, you hope. Former South Florida head coach Willie Taggart at his third different stop in Florida. You hope South Florida is able to play, or you hope FAU is able to play next weekend. And like I said, Memphis had to cancel their second game in a row. They're not playing next weekend. So, be interesting to see if FAU is ready to go take on the Bulls.
The final game that we have not discussed yet in the American yesterday was Cincinnati. They were playing Austin Peay at Nippert Stadium. You expected it to be lopsided. It was. Austin Peay, of course, had lost week one to Central Arkansas, and then they were just steamrolled at Pitt in game two. Yesterday, 55-20 Bearcats. Desmond Ritter, veteran quarterback for Cincinnati, threw for around 200 yards on 20 or so attempts, a couple touchdowns. Also ran it four or five times for 50-plus yards. And very balanced attack for the Bearcats. They had – this is pretty crazy, Kyle, when you look at it in terms of 276 yards rushing, and Desmond Ritter's 54 yards was the leading rusher for Cincinnati.
Very balanced running attack. When you got the offensive line, Cincinnati should, you can do that against Austin Peay, who quality FCS program in recent history, have an interim head coach this year, struggling mightily. And get some good competition. But I don't really know what more you can say about that one. Cincinnati with the big blowout win, as they should have done. They did what they were supposed to. Who's up next for the Bearcats?
Next up for the Bearcats, this is an extremely intriguing matchup. Next Saturday, 3:30 on ESPN at Nippert Stadium, number 22 Army comes to town.
Yeah, my gut tells me that the way Cincinnati plays ball, that they are so much more talented than Army, that they should win that game probably handedly. But, man, Army's looked really good through two games.
Yeah, I think it would not surprise me to see that one go either way. I would give Cincinnati the edge with it being at Cincinnati. I mean, obviously, crowds are unfortunately not much of a factor this year really anywhere. I think – did you notice that yesterday, or were they able to have any fans at Nippert Stadium?
I'm not sure. I want to say they are. I'm not sure how many. I didn't notice, but I'm pretty sure they are. I will say this about Army. Both teams they played are horrible. Middle Tennessee is god-awful. We saw that as they played Troy yesterday. And Louisiana and Monroe, you didn't know how bad they were. Texas State, who was 0-2, handled Monroe last night. So I don't think Army's played anybody any good. So keep that in mind when you're making your pick for that one.
Moving on from the American to games of state and regional interest, we mentioned that Marshall App State game earlier. And that was one that I watched a decent amount of yesterday. It was on actually CBS, not just the CBS Sports Network, but it was on CBS. And 17-7, Marshall. Marshall jumped on them, went right down the field out of the gates, and then App State responded, and then it was really a defensive struggle. And that one, like I said, finished 17-7 with number 23 App State falling to the herd.
Yeah, impressed with Marshall defensively through 2 weeks, one shutout, and then held out the seven. They are very physical on defense, play with an attitude. I watched App against Charlotte, and I wasn't a huge fan of what App was doing offensively at times. I do think App has a pretty good defense. So that's something that they may be able to hang their hat on this year. But offensively, I think Appalachian has problems. Marshall has a good defense, decent offense. I do like the freshman quarterback. I'm not sure what we saw yesterday. I think we saw a team with two good defenses and one team with a decent offense and one team with an offense that's going to struggle. That's what I think we saw. Nonetheless, as we speak right now, Marshall's 2-0 and looking really good, and may get to be in the top 25 for 1 week before the Big Ten schools are allowed to be in starting next week. Good win for the herd. App's got some pieces there, man. That they got some talent at running back. They their quarterback's very experienced. They got some good receivers. The talent's there. I don't like some of the play calling sometimes. It's not very consistent. But don't want to take anything away from Marshall, though. They are very physical on defense.
A couple other things of note in this ball game: Brendan Knox, running back for Marshall, or one of the running backs for the herd, he had a right around 130 or 40 yards yesterday. It's an absolute load. I'm very impressed with him. And obviously, there's no secret about it. App State wants to run the football. Yesterday, they really weren't able to do so. 216-96 on the ground in favor of Marshall. So that really jumped off the page when you're looking at the box score. And also something that really stands out, and we referenced it last week on the playback, they were able to beat Charlotte with three turnovers. Yesterday they had two more turnovers and also I think maybe 8 or 9 penalties.
Mm-hmm.
So last year in 14 games, they committed 9 turnovers, which is just insanely good. This year in 2 games, they've already turned it over 5 times.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe that's some practicing issues also. They did have COVID issues there. I don't know. But like I said, they don't look great on offense. I think that had a lot to do with last week against Charlotte. They do it. Like I said, I think they do have a good defense. And I don't think Charlotte's defense is very good. Charlotte's going to beat you scoring points. And App's going to have to hang their head on their D this year, I think, a lot. It'll be interesting to see how their season plays out. They have the potential to still have a pretty good year. But like you said yesterday, not impressive on offense, turning the ball over, couldn't get the running game going. And Marshall, with their big running back, kind of dominated the clock.
Yeah, taking a look at what these teams have up next, you talk about App. They have Campbell coming to Kid Brewer Stadium next week.
Not prove anything on that one. It'll make you feel better, but it's not going to prove anything.
Right. What I was leading into, they have that one, but I guess 10 or 11 days from now, because I think it's a midweek game. I don't recall if it's a Wednesday or Thursday night or against Louisiana. And we'll talk about the Raging Cajuns having an overtime victory in Atlanta yesterday. Came from at least 2 touchdowns back against Georgia State, the team that's actually on the docket for the Pirates in game 2 on October 3rd down in Atlanta. So very interested to see that game between App State and Louisiana. Here, it's actually going to be at Kid Brewer Stadium because last year they played twice and the regular season game was down in Louisiana, and then the championship game was, of course, in Boone.
No, yeah, that'll be a good one, and I believe that is a Wednesday night, Bubba. So they got Campbell Saturday, and then not the following Wednesday, but the Wednesday after that. I guess that will be October the 6th, something like that. They'll be playing the Raging Cajun there in Boone. And it's regional enough to me, Bubba. You want to just step into that one. The Raging Cajun yesterday taking on future East Carolina opponent Georgia State down in Atlanta, GA. Georgia State jumps on Louisiana early. Georgia State looks physical, man. Great job by Sean Elliott, the guy who wanted to be the head coach of the Pirates back when we hired Scotty Montgomery, ladies and gentlemen, and Jeff Confer wouldn't give him the time of day. He got the head coaching job about a year later at Georgia State. Been there 3 years, taking them to 2 bowl games out of 3 years. This is year number 4 for him, and they look pretty good. I do think that was a little bit of Louisiana coming out flat after an emotional win over Iowa State. But Georgia State still looks really solid. They look physical. They look athletic. They do not look like what you think a Sun Belt team should look like. They look good. They look the part. The Raging Cajun battles back, full quarter ball game, takes it into overtime and wins it in overtime. Kind of that never say die attitude. Louisiana's a good football team. Georgia State gave them everything they want, everything they had. Not taking anything away from the Panthers in that game. But Raging Cajun found a way to win it in overtime and 2-0.
Yeah, that's one of those that game. Earlier, I talked about that over-under in the SMU-North Texas game. The line in this one was Louisiana by 17. I just felt like Louisiana would win the ball game, which they barely did. But I just thought that line was probably a bit much, given that they were coming off such a huge win and going on the road for a second straight week. I thought Georgia State would give them everything they wanted, and they certainly did. Both teams in this one ran for well over 200 yards. Louisiana finished with 240, and Georgia State had 223.
Yeah. Were you impressed? I don't know how much of that game you watched. Were you impressed with how good Georgia State looked physically?
Yeah, it seems like Coach Elliott and Sean Elliott and staff and clearly have an excellent strength program as well. It would appear based on the physical conditioning and the way Georgia State just looked physically.
Yeah, they look great. And if anybody thought that was going to be an easy victory for the Pirates, first of all, you haven't been paying any attention recently. Georgia State beat Tennessee last year, went to a bowl. But we're going to have our hands full in Atlanta in a couple weeks. Don't get me wrong. I think we can win the football game. But it's going to take I'll say this. That will be the best win of the Coach Houston era if we get it.
Yeah, it would be. And something else about that matchup, you referenced Georgia State's physicality. Clearly, our defense has its work more than cut out for it against UCF this week. That goes without saying, but don't underestimate the challenge that they're going to face in the trenches on the Pirates against Georgia State and the Panthers. That's something that Sean Elliott's teams are going to pride themselves on. I referenced they ran for well over 200 yards yesterday, last year. In the opener, they ran for well over 200 yards at Tennessee. Our youth in the trenches, they'll have to rise to the occasion and really play much older than they are in game two on October 3rd down in Atlanta.
Yeah, and next up for the Panthers, provided Charlotte was ready to go, Charlotte had to cancel their game with North Carolina this week because of COVID, and provided the 49ers are ready to go, that's next up for Georgia State. They are supposed to take on Charlotte this coming Saturday. I'd be interested to see if that game happens.
Yes, it will. And next up for the Raging Cajuns, they return home to take on Georgia Southern. So hopefully that game will be able to take place. Georgia Southern, we assume, is getting back to health. And they face the difficult task of going down to Louisiana.
Yeah, that one shouldn't be a problem. That should be on, I say that, but you know what I mean. I think Georgia Southern, they played a game with 30 guys out against Campbell. They should be healthy by now unless something happens with Louisiana. But
and that is a 12 o'clock kickoff on ESPN2. That if folks are around the TV and next Saturday, that's one that would be fun to watch.
Yeah, I imagine most of our audience will be busy at 12 o'clock next Saturday, but you never know.
Yes, probably so. And let's hope they have a reason to stay tuned in for 3 hours.
Hey, I'm staying tuned in for 3 hours no matter what, dude. It's first game of the year. UCF's a good, great football team. If they blow it, look, and that's something else I'm going to say right now, and I'll say it again later, and I'll say it all week. If UCF blows us out, do not get discouraged and think the season's over, guys. UCF will probably be the best team we play all year, and that's including Cincinnati.
Couldn't agree with you more. And, of course, I was just speaking in general terms of the way a lot of folks are because, like you, I will be tuned in for the duration. Moving closer to home within the ACC, NC State was opening its season last night at Carter-Finley Stadium, and the Wolfpack really jumped on Wake Forest early and then had to come from behind in the fourth quarter to get the win, 45-42. and Dave Dorn and company take down Dave Clawson's Deeks. What were your thoughts on this one? Because I know you were able to watch more of this game than I was.
I like their offense. I like Tim Beck a lot. I've always thought he was a good coach, good hire by Dave Dorn. Dave Dorn's got a great staff over there right now, Tim Beck, Ruffin McNeil, et cetera. I thought the Wolfpack looked good. You know, their defense struggled at times, but they made plays when they had to. This is the best offense NC State has had in a long time. It'll be interesting to see how long Tim Beck hangs around in Raleigh.
Yeah, Dave Dorn, you have to give credit where credit's due, and he definitely does have an excellent staff. Some other things that jumped out about this game, Bailey Hockman, quarterback for NC State, and last year the quarterback position was such an issue for the Wolfpack. He was 16 out of 23, one touchdown, one interception, also ran for a touchdown, and then he received a lot of help from the ground game. Ricky Person Jr. and Bam Knight had huge days on the ground. I think both of them were just shy of 100 yards.
Yeah, I mean, great offensive performance by the Wolfpack, and a good offensive performance by the Demon Deacons also. The Deeks, big turnaround from their opener against Clemson. The problem, if you're Wake Forest, is your schedule. They got a murderer's row schedule, and not too many wins that you see. Then again, who knows, man? When you can play offense like that, if your defense can come around at all, they may pick up a couple here and there, and Clawson's a good coach. But very tough schedule for Wake. As you mentioned, they got Notre Dame up next, and I looked at their schedule, and outside of Syracuse, I can't remember if they played Duke or not. I don't see too many wins.
Yeah, the coronavirus certainly did them no favors in terms of adjusting their schedule. They were supposed to – I mean, they had an excellent schedule anyway, but it became even more challenging due to the COVID impact, starting off with Clemson at home and then going to NC State, which is certainly no slouch, and then Notre Dame coming in next week. And so they're certainly going to have to put an excellent performance together. They're staring 0-3 in the face. As far as NC State, the Wolfpack will travel to Virginia Tech. The Hokies looking to play its opener next week after having to postpone the UVA game. That one is a prime timer next weekend, ACC Network at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, and again, that game was also postponed from its original date. That was supposed to be the opener for the Wolfpack and the Hokies back on the 12th, and didn't happen. So the Hokies have had to postpone two openers. Let's hope it's not three, and they get to open up their season with the Wolfpack next week. Yeah, that should be a good game, man. I may like the Wolfpack in that one because their offense is good.
I agree with you, Kyle, and that's one for sure that we'll have an eye on next weekend. Another game close to home, North Carolina was not in action yesterday because of Charlotte's issues with contact tracing among one of their position groups. I believe it was either the offensive or defensive line. So the Tar Heels will return action. I believe it's next weekend. I'll check on that as far as who they have next week. And then another team that was in action was Duke, and they fell hard, though, 26-6 to Boston College, in a result that really surprised me.
Yeah, I did not get to see any of that game. I don't know where it was televised, but I couldn't find the damn thing. All BC in that one, I really don't have anything to say about it because I didn't get to watch it. But certainly the scoreboard shows that Boston College dominated.
Yeah, I was following it on my phone. I was like you. I couldn't find it on my dish package. But 7-6 BC at halftime, and then it was all BC, 19-0 in the second half. And normally when you think of Boston College, you think of a tremendous ground attack, at least post Matt Ryan. But their quarterback yesterday threw for 300 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Chase Bryce, the transfer from Clemson, in his second game with the Blue Devils, finished 23 out of 42 for 217, but he had two picks that I'm sure proved costly in that one. So next up for the Blue Devils, they will be bear with me here. Next up for the Blue Devils is next Saturday in that game that was rescheduled against UVA. And then for Boston College will be gotta love slow internet. Boston College will be taking on Texas State, and Texas State, after losing their first two, they won by three touchdowns, like I believe you referenced earlier.
They're not bad.
At ULM, they're like you were saying, they're not a bad team, and that's one I would think Boston College will probably win, but it would not shock me if Texas State's competitive next weekend in Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, Boston College will win the game, but they're 1-2 and could easily be 2-0, could easily be 3-0, could easily be 2-1 or even 3-0. So Boston College better bring their A game. But Texas State, despite that 1-2 record, is a very improved football team.
Yeah, guys. So you were talking about Duke. That game was so bad yesterday with missing the extra point, and after that, it was all downhill for the Blue Devils. So that Virginia game, if they start out 0-3 with the way ACC is this year, it's going to be a really rough year for the folks in Durham.
Were you able to find the game on TV?
I couldn't find the game. I couldn't find the game on TV.
We all three have Dish Network, so it would. My guess is it was on a regional network because Dish Network Dish has had a falling out with a lot of the Fox Sports Net affiliates. So that would be my guess, is that was a regional Fox Sports Net
game. And the NFL Network. There's no NFL Network now on Dish, so.
Yeah.
On my app yesterday, guys, it was saying, I want to say it said CHSS, whatever that is.
That's what I was going to ask you guys. Is that Chapel Hill Sports? I don't know. I was like, CH. I didn't know what that was.
I have no idea. CH maybe stands for Channel SS Sports South. So Fox Sports South. And we are not getting that on our Dish Network anymore. So there's your answer.
That was one I was going to look up to see what CHSS was, to see if I could maybe find it.
I forgot to do that after. Yeah.
The game was so uninteresting, I didn't even bother with it.
It's Fox Sports South. They're probably saying CH is probably for channel, and then SS is Sports South. So that would be my guess. If you know, and I'm wrong, please provide the answer in the comments below.
Something else, guys, as far as Marshall, when we're talking about Marshall being 2-0, and I wanted to follow up with this when we're talking about that ball game. Marshall is now off for 3 weeks. They were supposed to play Rice on October 3rd, but Rice has whatever going on down there in Houston. So they will not play again, Marshall that is, until they travel to Western Kentucky. The Hilltoppers lost a heartbreaker yesterday, 30-24 or something like that. Very competitive ball game. Maybe it was 34-30 to Liberty, and that was actually at Western Kentucky. And so that one will take place between Marshall and WKU on October 10th.
Yeah, so they got 2 weeks off in a row, and then we'll play on the third week.
Yeah, 2 weeks off. They play 3 weeks from now. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I don't know what's up with Rice. Rice has been pushing back the start of their schedule over and over. And last I heard is they were going to start October 3rd. When are they planning on starting now?
Not sure. I was talking to Sam Raz, who covers the Houston Cougars, about that because their game with Rice was, of course, impacted a few weeks ago. And he said he really hasn't heard. I don't know if they're playing it pretty close to the vest, because that was one that I'm sure he was trying to dig up the information on, but had not had any success.
Yeah, I don't get that. I had heard they were going to start the season in October. You know, I don't mean to throw jabs and punches. We're at a weird time right now, but Conference USA's commissioner has not impressed me over the years. And I would tell Rice, you're going to have to give us a specific start date or you're just not playing this year in conference. You can't keep just pushing back your start date, pushing back your start date. And, you know, obviously if it's COVID related, if they're having a bunch of positive tests, but they've been doing this since August. They have not been having positive tests that consistently since August. My God, I wouldn't think. I mean, so I don't know what's going on down at Rice. And if anybody knows what their projected start date is now, because last I heard it was going to be October 3rd. So who the hell knows?
Yeah, that's something to keep an eye on with regards to Marshall's scheduling, see if they do, in fact, have those back-to-back open dates, or if they try to, if somebody else has something available, if they seek to add anything.
Guys, one of the things I was going to mention, too, is that with the very fact that looking at our future opponents, if you add in Marshall in early December, man, the three of our opponents look really good yesterday with Central Florida and, of course, Marshall. And with you were talking about earlier with Georgia State, my gosh, those three teams look really, really good on if that is a 10-game schedule for us.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how things play out with Marshall. Nobody in Conference USA has blown me away. Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but could Marshall be undefeated? You know, and I, as of right now, Dave, the Conference USA Championship game is still on December 5th. I do think that'll be moved. But as we sit today, I wouldn't expect to play Marshall December 5th at the Conference USA Championship game stays on that date.
Transitioning, guys, another game that we have not talked about yet. It's not of regional interest from the standpoint of either of these teams being located here, but it's involving ACC teams. Number 17, Miami, traveling to number 18, Louisville. You saw De'Eriq King. He didn't do it with his legs last night, but he sure did it with his arm, throwing for in excess of 300 yards. And the Canes got a big one on the road, 47-34 over Scott Satterfield and the Cardinals.
If Miami can reel their penalties in and not play like thugs on defense, they could be really good this year. De'Eriq King's a good quarterback. Obviously, got his legs. Had also can pass as he showed yesterday. Rhett Lashley's a pretty good OC. I think Miami could really compete in the ACC and perhaps be the team that playing Clemson for the conference championship if they can hold it together. You know, Miami seems to in recent years have a tendency to look good for part of the season and bad for the rest. So they got to play the whole season. They got to keep it together for the whole season. And if they can reel it in on defense, you can't keep getting all those penalties on defense. That's going to cost you eventually. Miami could be a really good football team this year. Could be the best Miami team in a while. I know Georgia's old coach. He had a couple good teams there. But
Mark Richt.
Yeah, Mark Richt. But this could potentially be their best team. Even better than some of those Mark Richt teams.
Yeah, Manny Diaz, and I think that was the hire they needed to make as far as bringing in Rhett Lashley and getting De'Eriq King and transferring in from Houston. In addition to King's performance yesterday, he had a lot of help on the ground as well with Cameron Harris rushing for 134 yards on just 9 attempts.
Do you know how many penalty yards they had? Well, when I was watching it, they were making some foolish penalties on defense, and maybe it wasn't a lot of them, but the ones they made were foolish.
They had 11 penalties for 89 yards. So yeah, they were pretty highly penalized, as you thought.
Yeah, they need to reel that in, and if they can reel that in, they'll be a pretty good football team. And they already are a pretty good football team, but I mean a contending football team in the ACC.
And they had zero turnovers, whereas Louisville had three.
Yeah, did all three of us take the cards? I don't remember. I know I took the cards. So
I know I took Louisville. One I kind of went back and forth on, but I was like, with it being at Louisville and first, I mean, limited capacity as everywhere, but at the same time, they had a decent number of fans, I want to say. I'm checking the attendance on that.
Around 11,000.
Yeah, they had 12,120. And so there's still enough to make some noise. And with yes, Derek King's an experienced quarterback, but in a new system. So that was kind of my logic going with Louisville. And if you'd have told me though that Miami was not going to commit a turnover and Louisville would have three, I would say hands down Miami wins.
Sure, if you can predict the future, you'd be a millionaire. I think our picks yesterday, mine in particular, I don't think any of us did good, but mine in particular were atrocious. If anybody took our picks yesterday and went to Vegas with them, they want to kill us. I mean, mine were god awful.
For sure.
I mean, mine were just god. And normally I'm pretty good. I was just that. Geez, it's the COVID. You don't know what you're looking at.
And another thing about it, for those who are gambling men and women, that's you can hone in on a game or two or three that you really like, as opposed to picking 10 games, because some of those picks I wasn't very confident in, and it showed. I've already referenced, we've referenced some of the ones that would have been much more confident picks, like the over under with the SMU game.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'll tell you one I felt pretty confident in was App over Marshall yesterday.
Yeah.
I did not expect Marshall to come out and I did not expect App to come out and only put up 7 points. I don't think anybody did. But it just goes to show you, Tony Peterson isn't very good.
Yeah, if you would have told me, it didn't shock me so much that Marshall won the game, but I would have thought that Marshall would have won 27-24, 24-21, something like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
What are other games that anything else that we have not covered that really stood out to you?
Yeah. Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech.
I referenced that early on. Go ahead, and I know you you watched a lot of that, as did I. That was really the game that I was watching last night with a tremendous back and forth game between the Bulldogs and Golden Eagles.
Man, couple things. First of all, Southern Miss is a new interim head coach, 30-year-old. What's his name, Bob? I'm terrible with names. That's not it.
The offensive coordinator, right?
Yeah, well, it was co-offensive coordinator, whatever his name is. Young guy, 30 years old. He's a lunatic. I've never seen somebody that interject, had a lot of energy on the sidelines.
His name is Scotty Walden. Sorry.
Scotty Walden, yeah. Walden was a nut on the sidelines. Fun to watch. I'm not saying that in a bad way. Had those guys fired up. They had they got their asses kicked week one against South Alabama, played much better against Louisiana Tech. Their receiver Jones, who was their best weapon last night, went out in the third. I really think had he stayed in, they would have won that ball game. Their running game is very inconsistent. That's something that they got to get better at. And when I say that, I mean Southern Miss. One minute, it looks like they can run the ball like, you know, the best team in the country. They can just run it down your throat. The next minute, they can't gain any yards. So they got to get more consistent with their run game. But I think had Jones not went out at receiver, they'd have won the ball game. What happened, it came down. They had a 17-point lead. La Tech come back. It cuts the lead to 3. Southern Miss gets a field goal. It's back up to 6. Louisiana Tech drives down the field, gets it down in the red zone, has it first and goal under a minute to go, and it comes down to a fourth and goal play. La Tech throws the ball to the back of the end zone on fourth and goal, and it's called incomplete. Southern Miss wins. They're celebrating, going to just have to take a knee on the clock out, and then you hear previous plays under further review, and Louisiana Tech's receiver got his toe down. Almost his whole foot, but it was pretty close. He got his toe down before his heel went out of bounds, and it was called a reception. One camera angle, guys, caught that. Had they not had that camera angle, I don't think it would have been overturned. All the other camera angles showed that it was a bang-bang play, and I think it would have stand as called. But that one camera angle made it very evident that Louisiana Tech got their foot down at the back of the end zone. And the call was reversed, and Louisiana Tech wins the game. Heartbreaking, man, heartbreaking. You think you just pulled off a big fourth down stop and beat La Tech. And I felt so bad for Southern Miss and for Scotty Walden. And, you know, congratulations to Skip Holtz and Joe Sloan and, Blackwell. Got two former Pirates on Skip's staff as OC and DC. So congratulations to those guys. But felt bad for Southern Miss. One of the most heartbreaking endings you'll ever see if you're unless you're cheering for La Tech. But me, Southern Miss is my second favorite team because I got a lot of friends in Hattiesburg. And very, very sad for the Golden Eagles not to pull that one out.
I was going to say, Kyle, watching that game, I thought they had won the game. And then I looked back at the – I looked back and saw that they lost the game. I really thought they'd won that game. Southern Methodist.
Yeah. They were up big at one point, and La Tech comes storming back, and then that play comes in the fourth quarter and on fourth down, and it's called an incomplete pass, and Southern Methodist celebrate, and they review the play, and lo and behold, touchdown Louisiana Tech. And that's just, you know, sometimes, we're all old enough to remember when there was no review in college football, and sometimes you're glad to have it, and sometimes you wish it didn't exist. And if you're a Southern Miss fan, you wish that didn't exist. And one other thing I'll bring up about that game. Earlier in the game, Southern Miss went for two. I have no idea why they did the old kind of swinging gait that Boise State does. I do not know why they did that. It was poorly designed. Did not work. And had they not went for two there, they would have went into overtime instead of losing. Now, who knows if that would have cost them the ball game because they may have lost it in overtime. But had they not gone for two there, it would have been overtime instead of losing by one.
Yeah, when you looked at that play, when I saw it live, I was like, what are they doing? Because you're looking at the numbers,
yep.
and they clearly had the numbers. The numbers were not in their favor, so I don't know why they did what they did. But to their credit, they moved past it and played well from that point on for the most part. I mean, having that 27-10 lead before and not being able to hold on. But yeah, keeping an eye on Scotty Walden and the Golden Eagles, if they continue to improve, he may have a very realistic chance of landing that job and having the interim tag removed.
Yeah, he's a guy that is so fiery. I think his team plays him first because they get on momentum runs because of how he is. He's a guy that I would think would be somebody who would pull off some upset. Unfortunately, because of COVID, Southern Miss doesn't have that opportunity this year to take on an SEC or a Big 12 or ACC school to have the opportunity to pull off an upset. But just that personality on the sidelines, he seems like the kind of coach that may beat Mississippi State and then the following week lose to Monroe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, guys. And when I was watching that game and seeing how Southern Miss played and then I thought they'd won the game, I was taking a note of that I was going to ask you guys if you thought that with the win that obviously I thought they won the game and didn't realize until after the fact they lost with that play. I was going to ask you if you thought that he would be able to have the interim tag removed and be the head coach.
No, not after 1 week, even if he had won.
No. I'm saying if he, in other words, if he continued, not just
a lot of season plays out. Yeah. There's definitely a chance. Had they won last night, that would have been a big step. Cause La Tech's one of the favorites to win the conference. So that would have been a big step into, getting the interim tag removed, but there's still a lot of ball left. Yeah. I would say 5-6 wins, he'll probably get an interim tag removed because he's somebody that the fans are going to like. I'm sure there are some fans that won't like his personality because they want a more traditional acting coach. But he is very amusing to watch. And I'll tell you something else. He's a guy that will get you on TV. If they start winning with him, he's somebody that the ESPN pundits will talk about a lot because of his personality.
Somebody else, Griffin Hebert, the wide receiver for La Tech, that had the game-winning catch, and he had a big night. And I wonder, I was trying to research it, but I know it's definitely not his father. I don't know if there is a relationship, though, family relationship, Griffin Hebert to former New Orleans Saints quarterback Bobby Hebert.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have no clue.
But
Southern Miss has a running back. Can't think of his name right now, Bubba. You'll know.
Frank Gore Jr.
Yeah, whose dad is still playing. I mean, that, I don't remember ever hearing about that before. The kids playing in college and their dad still playing in the NFL. This may be a first.
I can't reference specifically, but I'm pretty sure it's probably happened at some point. I know.
Do you think Frank Gore Sr. can make it 4 years, four more years, and that could be the first father son to play in the NFL together?
Just because of who knows, perhaps. But that you're kind of leading into what I was going to say, that in football, the careers are so much shorter, particularly at running back, and then in baseball. But you had a situation where that's happened several times, just because it's much easier to have a longer baseball career where you had Ken Griffey Sr. playing with Ken Griffey Jr., et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And it was cool to see it in baseball. It'd be even cooler to see it in football.
Next up for La Tech, they will be at home in Ruston next weekend, taking on high-flying Houston Baptist. So we'll be very interested to see how David Blackwell and company are able to slow down that passing attack of HBU.
What's Southern Miss got next?
Next up for Southern Miss is, I think, Tulane.
That's right. Yeah,
We talked about that earlier. And Tulane's coming to the Rock next week, and that's a 2:30 kickoff on Stadium.
Interesting game. That'll be very interesting to watch. I'll check that one out after our game. Should be and that's probably 3:30. You're probably looking at a central time kick with that 2:30. But that should be interesting.
I would think you're right, Kyle. That's probably 3:30. I think generally on this app, though, I think it may vary from school to school. I thought all times were Eastern, but that would be odd for sure to have a 2:30 rather than a 3:30 kickoff. But whatever the case, very interested to see how Tulane bounces back in addition to how Southern Miss bounces back.
Yeah, that'd be a very, very intriguing game for me to watch from a personal standpoint of being a Southern Miss fan, and then a conference standpoint of watching the Green Wave.
Go ahead, Dave. I know you had something you wanted to chime in with.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you guys your thoughts. Obviously, before we're starting the game week, if you will, I just want to get your thoughts before we go. And here in a few minutes, I want to get your take, both of you, on what do you think? We saw the Pirates. We saw Central Florida, the opponent for the Pirates, this coming Saturday, high noon at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. How in the world do we beat the Knights? What do you guys think we would have to do?
I don't know. According to some people, we're due. But besides that, pray really hard to pull off an upset. This is what would have to happen. First of all, our offense has got to click the way we think it can click. We're going to have to score a lot. We were going to have to force some turnovers against UCF because we ain't going to stop them. So we would need some turnovers. So that's pretty much the answer. Make a play or two on special teams. That's how you got to beat them. You're going to have to outscore them. You're going to have to force some turnovers. And you're going to have to make some plays on special teams because you ain't stopping them.
And we're going to have an improved ground game. We're going to have to see.
That goes in with the scoring.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I mean, because you can't just possess the ball and not get points. And we're going to have to be very good in all facets to be in position to even – have a chance in the fourth quarter to pull off the upset. And we're going to have a performance like we did last year against Cincinnati or SMU offensively. And then, like Kyle said, manage to get some stops by forcing some turnovers and getting extra possessions.
Yeah, really, in all honesty, if we have a game like that SMU game where it's a back-and-forth shootout and we lose just in a scoring fest, I'll be quite happy. I don't think anybody's going to stop this UCF team. I think Georgia Tech's got a good defense, and they lit them up. Like Bubba said, we could score 50, and we'll probably still lose. If any of the players happen to see this, this is not trying to make the players not have faith or anything like that, or not saying we believe in you. I think that's going to be the case for pretty much anybody that plays UCF this year. Their offense looked electric, and it's going to take a supreme effort to have a chance. And I just want to be competitive. And I'm just ready to watch us play, Bubba. I mean, I'm just ready to go out there and see Holton and CJ and Snead and Penix and the rest of these guys go out there and make some plays.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing all those guys you referenced, but some of the newcomers, guys like Chase Hayden and obviously Demetrius Mooney was there last year. I'll see how Hayden, Mooney, and Raji Harris and Keaton Mitchell and get that ground attack going a little bit so we can eat up some time on the way to the end zone because we will certainly need to do that to have a shot. I think – If we have a chance to pull this upset, we got to rush for 150 to 200 yards.
Yeah, I would agree. I just go out there and score points, man. I don't care if we're doing it throwing it or passing. I get what you're saying, but it'll be interesting to see what the line is in this game when it comes out today. It may already be out. I haven't checked the lines typically. Early afternoons when they come out, though, probably not just yet. I would expect to see UCF at about a four touchdown favorite. I would expect the line to be about 28 points.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, with the way they played against Georgia Tech yesterday, and the way the Pirates have been the last few seasons, four seasons, that we're not going to get the respect until we earn it, right?
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's about not having respect as much as it is about UCF being good. I think they'd be four touchdown favorites against a whole lot of football teams.
That's true, too. I know. I'm just saying that they it's not going to be a – it's not a situation you would expect the game to be a tight ball game right now because of having rebuilt the program.
No doubt. I mean, it's going to be – it's going to be what it'll be, and it's going to take a supreme effort for us to – for us to be competitive and an even bigger effort for us to win it.
No question. It's going to be, it's one of those things where it could be, we could surprise the Knights, or it could be bad because we play bad because it's our first game and we should have started a few weeks ago, but COVID has hurt us and a lot of other programs. So we'll see how that plays out. A new defensive coordinator, you pray that the, I'm excited to see, guys, by the way, the defensive line, how that plays out. I think Bubby said it was 12 guys they're going to have rotating in and out. That'll be a lot better this year. We'll see how.
A lot of young guys. They're going to have to keep some speed.
Oh, yeah.
And that is baptism under fire. When you're a young defensive lineman and you got to face that UCF offense, not only with the talent, but with the speed they run it. That is baptism under fire, my friend.
Yeah, I wish we could play USF next week instead of UCF. And I'm certainly not saying that would be a win by any means, because anybody that follows Pirate football over the last 20 years knows our struggles against USF, and they know what happened last year. But that would be a much more favorable matchup for an inexperienced defense, clearly.
I personally wish we could open up with Eastern Kentucky, but it is what it is. I'm just ready to see the Pirates play, man, and I hope Pirate Nation does not get too negative if it is a blowout next Saturday, and it most likely will be. But if it is a blowout this coming Saturday, guys, don't start with the Fire Mike Houston stuff, please. Just don't.
No, that's exactly right. The fact of the matter is you've got to have a whole bunch of people as far as rebuilding, and with the depth issues that we've had. Another interesting thing will be to see how the offensive line, if the offensive line can play well on Saturday, then that'll give us a chance. But if they struggle like they could potentially, then that's going to be a long day for the Pirates. But you're exactly right.
I think our offensive line will be better, Dave. If Steve Shankweiler, I know he's older now, but if Shank is anything like what he used to be, he's really good at developing the O-line. And this is his, he's had a year there. We brought in the transfer from UNC. I think our offensive line should be improved. I'm not saying we're going to have some juggernaut O-line, but I do expect it to be improved. What do you guys think?
I agree, Kyle, for the reasons that you mentioned. And just talking about this matchup a little more on something I meant to throw in earlier, Georgia Tech was able to have some success throwing the football, and they have a very young, inexperienced quarterback, and he threw for close to 250, and they had some success on the ground. So I really think offensively I would expect us to have a pretty good day next week, and we just need to have an exceptional day to put ourselves in position to pull off the stunning upset against a team that's clearly going to be top 15 because they already are. They may move up a spot or two.
Yeah, I agree with you. I fully could see us having a great offensive performance. You know, would not be surprised to see a 51-31 type ball game, something along those lines. I think we could score on them. I just don't think we can stop them.
It's going to be interesting to see. And again, Bubba, I know we've got a couple shows this week, and then of course we'll have our inside the slant, right?
Yeah, we'll have the inside slant probably next Friday night with the Pirates kicking off at noon on Saturday. We'll want to have that on Friday night. So probably about an 8 o'clock start for the inside slant. Spread the word for those of you who are watching this. And as far as our East Carolina shows, we will be announcing the time on those. We do have Tuesday night where Steve and Igo will join us to preview next week and the season on the whole. And then also Eric Ward from ECU Sports Marketing will be on the program about 8 o'clock to talk about the challenges and some of the exciting things that they still have in store for the game day production that will be noticeable on television.
Yeah. And we'll have a Pirate preview probably Thursday night, guys, something like that. And then we'll have post game. Are we going to try to have post-game coverage right after the game, guys?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Right. We'll have some cool stuff throughout Saturday, and certainly I would think Saturday night or Sunday. I think Saturday night we'll have the playback, so we'll have a chance to review the game, and hopefully we'll be talking about a Pirate victory. God, that would be fantastic. I was going to say it's going to probably take a miracle of Jake Verity field goal.
Yeah.
It'll be something like that. That'll be a long Jake Verity field goal to win it, to pull off an upset against UCF.
Yeah. It's going to take something.
If it comes down to a Jake Verity field goal, regardless of the outcome, I'll be ecstatic.
Yeah, me too. You just like Bubba said, stay tuned to find out what time things are going to be, what time the playback is going to be. Our post game wrap up after the UCF East Carolina game, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, guys. Anything else before we go?
No.
Yep.
All right. Great show. Appreciate you guys very much, Bubba and Kyle, for your hard work. Looking forward to Tuesday night with Stephen Igo and Eric Ward. Until next time, this is Dave Richmond, Kyle Barber, and Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been watching and listening to the College Football Playback right here on the Sports Objective. Good afternoon, everybody. Go Pirates.